Okay, so welcome everyone here today to the ladies' class. It's good to see you all here. Our title is Courage and Serenity, bringing to mind the Serenity Prayer that we're all familiar with. And I know we think of serenity, courage, and wisdom, but I would also like to talk about budgeting, management, and investment. People talk about management and investment of things like money and time, but I'm also thinking of management of our thoughts and energies and our life resources, things that I will call emotional capital, like relationships, opportunities. How are we budgeting and managing and investing those things? My dad told me about a time he invested $75 in a worm bed. The man selling the worm beds promised that soon the little white grubs would become earthworms, the earthworms would grow and multiply until you could divide your bed, you could sell the worms for a good profit, fishing worms were in demand. He kept the bed in a little shed and checked it every day, and the days went by, and weeks, and no worms appeared. The little white grubs, I don't know, they turned out to be something else. Finally, he took the remains of his worm bed and spread it on the garden. But he said it was the best $75 he ever spent because it taught him a good lesson. And there came a time in my life, and maybe not so long ago as you might think, when I became convicted about the way I was investing my emotional capital, spending too much time stressing about things that I wished I could change, or maybe grieving over things I wished would have turned out differently, not taking every thought captive. There were so many positives. Why wasn't I dwelling on those? And then I was reading about the brain and how our thoughts carve these grooves in our minds. We were talking about that last night. And it starts to bother me. Like, am I carving a deep thought groove in my mind, or in my brain, that was going to become harder and harder to avoid? You know how these old farm lanes, they get these ruts in, and the truck just naturally goes into the rut. Is that what I was doing? And I realized I have a limited amount of this emotional capital. There's no plan with unlimited minutes. So saying yes to unwholesome and negative thoughts means saying no to good and positive thoughts. Figuratively speaking, I was spending my resources on worm beds, not just once, but over and over. And I see the Serenity Prayer as a nutshell guide for making good emotional investments, good life investments. And as long as life keeps happening, we never outgrow the need. Maybe that's why it seems to be so popular. We see it on pillows and coffee mugs and wall hangings. But the philosophy has been around for centuries. There was a Jewish philosopher from the 11th century. You can see it on your handout. And they said, at the head of all understanding is realizing what is and what cannot be, and the consoling of what is not in our power to change. In 1801, Friedrich Schiller said, "Blessed is he who has learned to bear what he cannot change and to give up with dignity what he cannot save." And then, kind of a Mother Goose style, "For every ailment under the sun, there is a remedy or there is none. If there be one, try to find it. If there be none, never mind it." That pretty much covers it, I guess. Reinhold Niebuhr was the man who got the credit for the Serenity Prayer. He was a professor at the Union Theological Seminary in New York. And around 1933, he included this prayer in a sermon. "Father, give us the courage to change what must be altered, serenity to accept what cannot be helped, and the insight to know the one from the other." And it evolved into this prayer that I have printed on the handout. Over time, it was distilled into the one we're more familiar with today. I guess it fit better on the coffee mugs. Alcoholics Anonymous included it in their 12 steps. I think that's when it became popular. But I like the original version, which lends a little bit more, it qualifies it a little bit. It says, grace to accept with serenity the things that cannot be changed, and courage to change the things that should be changed. Not necessarily what I can, but what should be. And then wisdom to know the difference. But, like always, our enemy is trying to turn it around. I believe he wants to make us silent and passive when we should be courageous and bold. He wants to make us itch to control and change things in which we should be submitting and trusting. He wants us to waste all our emotional capital on buying an illusion of control and have nothing left for the battles that matter. Just think about our mother, Eve. She should have been strong, and she yielded. Then she turned around and coerced her husband into eating with her. She was convinced she was right, but she was so deceived. We don't have a record of their conversation that happened before Adam finally took a bite, but the Bible does say that Adam was not deceived. He knew better. Did he try to talk some sense into her? Did she argue and pressure and plead with him until he yielded to make her happy? What if she would have submitted to her husband, stood on the command of God, and said a firm no to the devil? So the first point was investing wisely. Now we move into the serenity prayer. The first thing, acceptance, or letting go. What are some things we should let go of and not try to control? Well, the first point I have is other people. I can't remake my husband, fix the school or the teacher. There was an editorial in the Christian School Builder a little while ago. It was entitled, Should I Fix It? Teachers can't really fix parents. Parents can't fix teachers, or new teachers can't fix this community culture. I, as a parent, can't always fix my children. Well, of course we try, but to make them be something that they're not meant to be. And yet, so often, we feel, I'm trying to achieve something good here. Why are my efforts not rewarded? And it probably would be a good thing if Honey would spend less at Starbucks and spend more time on his devotions, or if the school would put more emphasis on music, or if the people in your church would just be more attuned to things. But am I violating a principle? Such as Ephesians 5:33 is the principle of respect for my husband, or Ephesians 5:22, the principle of obedience to my submission to my authority. Romans 12, the principle of love and charity toward others, especially my family in Christ. Am I violating those principles? Would you give your child the apple on the table if he threw a fit for it? The apple's good for him, but the fit isn't. You're not going to necessarily reward or reinforce his behavior by giving him the apple. So why would God reward our efforts to change something if we're not using good methods? Maybe that's why we get tired and sad and frustrated. It was a little bit of a light bulb moment for me one time when I started to ask myself, is this destroying my peace? Isaiah 26:3 says, thou wilt keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee. And if I'm troubled and restless and disturbed and I just don't know for sure what to do, I'm not saying that we're never sad about things or that we're never, yes. But is that too strong a statement to make? I wouldn't mind some input. Is that, if it's destroying my peace, does that mean something's wrong? We can think about that a little bit. Does someone have a Bible with them?
Yes.
Do you? Could you look up Psalm 37? Some of my favorite verses are in this psalm. Our teacher had us memorize the entire chapter one time. It's pretty long. But there's some really good verses near the beginning. Libby, do you mind reading those? Verses 3 to the first part of verse 7.
Trust in the Lord and do good. So shalt thou dwell in the land, and verily thou shalt be fed. Delight thyself also in the Lord, and he shall give thee the desires of thy heart. Commit thy way unto the Lord, trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass. And he shall bring forth thy righteousness as the light, and thy judgment as the noonday. Rest in the Lord, and wait patiently for him.
Thank you. I remember a time one of my children was getting quite frustrated and irked over a situation in which he felt he had been clearly passed over and rejected. And I heard him, he made this statement, "I feel like going out and doing something dumb." And, of course, I'm the mom, I was feeling a little bit, you know, how you are, mama bear. What are people thinking? Why are they being so narrow? Maybe I should speak to someone, or maybe just casually inquire at least, and questions roll around in your mind. And then I realized, you know, maybe my prayers for this child are being answered. And I told him, "I understand why you're upset. I believe in you. But I have prayed, if the Lord needs to humble you in some way to make you useful, that he would do it." And from that perspective, maybe this is one of the most valuable things that ever happened to you. So I'm going to choose to view it that way. And then my questions were gone. I just felt certain that this is what I need to do. And I felt he respected that. And really, he didn't want me going to bat for him anyway, even if it was hard. And there came a time I actually felt grateful that the Lord had allowed that to happen. It was something I could not have communicated to him myself on my own. And we have to remember, positive changes sometimes take years. We just sometimes have to let go and let God. And the beautiful thing about that is that you are in God's will by letting go. Sometimes we have this, or I do, this subconscious notion that I'm slacking off. I'm not attending to things, but really in letting go, we're not saying yes to something wrong, and we're not pretending things are fine when they're not. We're saying yes to God and giving the control to him, putting us under the umbrella of God's blessing and freeing us up to do what we were meant to do, which is to nurture and nourish and support. This really resonated with me. I don't know if you've ever seen the book Trust or Control, written by Dorcas Stutzman. She said, "I was amazed at the increase in productive energy I had when I quit wasting it on worrying and trying to control people. I learned how to take things to God in honesty. Things that hurt me and situations that were out of line could be taken to the feet of the Savior for him to take care of, instead of adding toxic waste to my box of life." So what can we do? I wouldn't mind your thoughts in a bit. Like, how do you create positive culture within your framework? Like, specifically within your classrooms or your homes. I remember Anthony Hurst telling teachers some years ago that you can't necessarily fix the community culture or the school board or the parents, but you are 100% responsible for your own classroom culture. And I think the same thing goes for mom, if we have families. You have much influence on your family culture. What do you do to build a positive family culture? You know, mom's often the one that kind of creates the traditions. She records the memories. She makes the house into a home. Proverbs 14:1 says, "Every wise woman buildeth her house, but the foolish plucketh it down with her hands." And Debbie Pearl said, "A wise woman sets a joyful mood in the household. She uses laughter, music, and happy times to stir the children to a positive, joyful frame of mind. A wise woman knows that her husband's peace of mind and sometimes wise understanding is something she can give or take away, by her observations and conversation concerning circumstances and people. So you can work to create a positive climate and positive memories, speak words of life, be an encourager. So I just have some little specific things here, and I bet you have lots of good ideas, like how to create positive culture. One thing I have is celebrate things like birthdays and other occasions. I'm sure you do this faithfully. Supper time. Reader's Digest had an article, the most important hour in a child's day was the hour that the family sits together and eats. And, you know, within our culture, that's something really valuable that I think a lot of families don't experience. But we're just kind of used to that, and we know our friends are doing it, and it's something that's kind of expected, is that the family is going to sit together and eat at least once a day. What are your ideas? I know it's a little hard to start talking, but I'd love to hear your ideas.
Well, I think that moms need to listen to their children.
Mm-hmm.
But also realize they're not always right.
They're not always right. So so a culture of, okay, I think I know what you're saying.
Wisdom of just discernment.
Knowing that mom isn't going to be, just pushed around and maybe not.
But I would say even, especially when it comes to authorities in their lives, authorities outside of the home.
Oh, uh-huh. Yes.
Just remember your child is not the perfect one.
Yes.
And they can slant anything towards in their favor. I think that's a hard one for parents because we want our children to be perfect. I don't know what that spirit is.
But I understand, and I think some of us grew up. We can refer back to how we grew up, and it was just, you know, the teacher was right. We weren't used to our parents taking our side. If
no.
Yeah.
I realized I had such imperfect teachers so years later. I was like, really?
Yeah.
Talking about culture, positive culture, I can tend to be a little bit last minute, like, you know,
uh-huh.
You fly around feet up your dad. Well, I learned that you cannot do that to children. And it was, for mornings to go well, when the children were little, it was much better to get them up a half hour or an hour sooner than I would have liked, even if we got to bed, you know, a little bit later. And to let them wake up slowly and do their little routine, then to let them sleep and then rush them through breakfast. You have to hurry. You know, we have to go to church. That is an awful way to start the day. And it was just much more peaceful. Yeah, they might be a little sleepy, but they can take naps in the afternoon.
That's a good point, Faith. Sometimes we think we'll just take a few more of those quiet moments in the morning to ourselves
yeah.
and just wait till the last minute. But yes, if they
it
have
really
peaceful
helped
ways to start
our home a lot. Just
Thank you for that.
I had an idea for birthdays. I got some fresh and rosin for today for both happier at home.
Okay.
A birthday tray. I'm a terrible flop at decorating cookies. This is a way to make the birthday special more than their breakfast. I just put their breakfast on a tray with some candy and if I have flowers or some greenery. And a candle, and they love it. And it does not take me much extra time at all. And so far, it's been a big success.
Mm-hmm.
They even did it for me on my birthday.
That is.
I will add to that. I had made years ago, took a red big plate and a cup, and I painted like you are loved and you're special or something. And we always use it for birthdays. Well, now the children are getting older. My youngest is 13, and I thought they probably kind of outgrew it. I kind of forgot one time. And one of the last birthdays, one of the children brought it out, and the birthday person, I think it was Hans, who just turned 20, and he just grinned. big smile, like,
oh.
So it makes me feel not good.
Well, I know as your children get older, first you change. You don't
pull out the baby book.
Yeah, you still can make it special for them. Even their boys, but I don't know if they know this or not. Maybe someday they'll come back and get it.
I bet they will.
Probably.
This quote. To gather joyfully is indeed a serious affair, for feasting and all enjoyments gratefully taken and enjoyed are at the heart acts of war. Maybe you've read that in the popular liturgy book going around. But I kind of like that thought that, you know, even in creating small, positive memories, we are actually part of a bigger picture here. And when you bind their hearts with those positive things, then it strengthens them for bigger things. Did I mention singing?
No.
Did I say that?
No.
Be a singing mom. Someone shared how her sister had sent her just a list of song titles to post on the cupboard door to remind her of what to sing. She said it really worked. They had this title, not just the whole song, but just titles of songs that maybe you know, and it just brought... You know, rather than just randomly, intentionally singing through this list, I just thought that was such a nice idea.
One thing that my dad did every Sunday morning, it wasn't my mom, but I still treasure it. I just keep it on a big stack of records when it's time to wake up.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how they go?
Those old vinyl records? My dad would do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And it really did create an atmosphere of worship on Sunday morning. Like, it was worshipful music. It was nothing like, you know, whatever, playing the tour. It was just a ragged memory.
Those old Mountain Athens records.
What that meant to me.
Mm-hmm. I know what you mean. I have that memory in my mind, too.
I did that with my children. I put on my phone, start music at 8 o'clock. And it bings, and I'm in the middle of it.
School run is a great time to memorize verses. I hope my son doesn't have too many memories of, oh, it's Friday morning, you have to memorize this verse, now quick, we're not going in the school lane until you can say it. I like to fix foreign food and kind of visit other countries by doing that. Maybe not, that wouldn't be everybody's thing, but, and sometimes if I have something I want to read to the family and they're all captive there at the table eating, maybe I'll forego my dessert till later. I'm going to read you guys something while you're eating dessert. One mom had, during COVID-19 quarantine, they decided to have a Daffy supper just their family. So the children had so much fun just collecting all these Daffy things and setting the table. And I know we did it in the youth group, but I don't know if I ever thought of doing it with my family. I thought that was a great idea. Pictures on the walls that they just remember. Maybe it's not the cool decor, but my dad had memories of at home. Grandma had a picture on her wall of the broad and narrow way. And so I found that poster. I did a search, and yes, it was available. There was maybe one left or something, and so I got it and posted it on my wall, and I don't think they think it's very cool either, but... so that was all about, we were still on the point of changing people. Now there's circumstances that we can't change. The Serenity Prayer, it was interesting to me to read about when it came into being. 1933. What was happening in 1933? The Great Depression. Unemployment. Farm foreclosures. Dust Bowl. Poverty like we have never known. Also in 33, it was still a very dark time for the black people in America. They would be treated like third-class citizens for several more decades. In Europe, I believe, was that the year that Hitler was elected Chancellor of Germany? The noose was tightening around the Jews. There was a terrible war looming. And also, I think it was not very publicized at the time, but I think that was during the when Stalin enforced a man-made famine that killed maybe more than the Holocaust. It just was not publicized. But years later, it was terrible. And I'm not sure what all this pastor, Reinhold Niebuhr, had in mind when he wrote his prayer. But certainly there were many circumstances he couldn't change. What some of life's circumstances that we can't control, things like family background, mine or my spouse's, maybe I'm single and I wanted to get married, maybe we wanted more children and it didn't work out, maybe my husband doesn't work my choice of a job, maybe I'm tired of pinching pennies. My physical traits and gifts, maybe I'm not that good at stuff others are. Maybe our family isn't in the cool group. COVID taught us a few things about being in control. Other circumstances I haven't named, but you know, the constant agonizing over these just wastes our emotional capital. I'm sure some of you have read this quote by Charles Swindoll about attitude. The longer I live, the more I realize the impact of attitude on life. Attitude is more important than past, than education, money, circumstances, failures, successes, more important than appearance, giftedness, or skill. It will make or break a company, or a church, or a home. The remarkable thing is we have a choice every day regarding the attitude we embrace for that day. We cannot change the past or the fact that people will act in a certain way. The only thing we can do is play on the string we have, our attitude. I am convinced that life is 110% what happens to me and 90% how I react to it. I liked the quote, "Gratitude unlocks the fullness of life. It turns what we have into enough and more." There was a Vietnam veteran that lived in our community for a while. On the end of his shop, he had painted this huge mural. And the words over that, I think it was an eagle, the symbol of the United States. And he had painted the motto, "Every day is a holiday, and every meal a banquet." And we learned to know him. He had a fascinating life story, and his war experiences were fascinating. And what he explained was that was their motto. Every day that I'm still alive is a holiday. Every meal that we had something to eat was a banquet. So is my attitude toward life, is it one of poverty or of abundance? It is largely what I focus on. And I have the third thing, I know it's kind of hard for me to talk about this right now. The hardest thing, you know, I know I haven't experienced what some of you have, like the death of loved ones, sickness, disability, children losing their way, betrayal in marriage, infertility, broken friendships, loss of innocence of your childhood, financial setbacks, and more. Those are harder than some of the other, than, you know, some of these other circumstances. So how do we accept those things? How do we forgive or stay free of bitterness? Or deal with regrets and the if only? I'm sure there's lots we could share. If I've picked up things from talking to my friends. I know Laura recommended the book, A Grape Disguised. And I took it home. I found that I really appreciated that book. Jerry Singer is the author, and he talked about the decision to face the darkness, even if it led to overwhelming pain. He said, pain is a gift because it shows we have the ability to feel. Pain is the flip side of pleasure. Never have I felt so broken, yet never have I been so whole. My soul has been stretched. Above all, I have become aware of the power of God's grace and my need for it. And I'll share this. My mom talked to me about this one time, and she said, I feel like, as I've seen God's grace work in the life of a dear friend of ours, and who had endured the unimaginable loss of her children, which were, a lot of us are acquainted with her too, seeing how it carried one of her daughters, which is my sister, through a very stressful time in her marriage. And that helped her let go of the fear that she had, that my mom said she struggled with, of the future, like, what if something would happen to me that I couldn't handle? Helped her let go of that fear because she saw that God's grace would be there too, even for the hardest things, and I would say especially for the hardest things. This poem that I put on your handout, I thought the author was unknown. I've since discovered it came from Amy Carmichael. In Acceptance Lies Peace. She said, I will forget their long-loved faces. The empty places, they shall be filled again. O voices, mourning deep within me, cease. Vain, vain the word, not in forgetting lies peace. She said, I will submit, I am defeated. God hath depleted my life of its rich gain. O futile murmurings, why will you not cease? Vain, vain the word, not in submission lies peace. She said, I will accept the breaking sorrow, which God tomorrow will to his child explain. Then did the turmoil deep within her cease. Not vain the word, not vain, for in acceptance lies peace. And I have a little something to add to that from a lady I know and respect. I call her, in Romanian they would say she's my socra, which means she's my daughter's mother-in-law. We don't have a word like that in English to describe what that lady is to you, but that's her relationship to me. And I read something that she wrote one time about a struggle she was having accepting what life had given her. She grew up in a home with three handicapped sisters, which meant that their life was limited in many ways. And she described how one day she was out in the garden just struggling with accepting this. Why is life this way for our family? Why? I think they felt some maybe looked down on by the community. There were things that they could not do. And she was trying to accept this, and she began to think, the Bible says, in everything give thanks. How can I give thanks for the lives of my sisters? And so she began to consciously count those blessings. She said, it taught us self-denial, because we couldn't go on trips and enjoy a lot of things that other families did, but we learned self-denial through that. We learn to appreciate the little things, little victories and improvements. We learn to know the friendships that they formed through that, the people they met that they wouldn't have met otherwise. I think there was more. It was really an inspiration. And in time, she was able to sincerely say, thank you. I want to I do want to be understood. I'm not saying just accept it, that that's going to fix it all by itself. It's a necessary part of the journey to healing, not the only part, but important. Peter Kreeft said, "Earth is not outside heaven. It is heaven's workshop, heaven's womb." The last part is, the next one, laying hold, that's the courage part. Courage is God's will for us as well. I think I put the poem in your handout. Be strong. Be strong. Okay, we are not here to play, to dream, to drift. I'm not going to read that. I like that poem, though. There's women of courage that we can go to in the Bible, like Abigail and Ruth, Queen Esther. They weren't just silent and passive. They acted when the time was right. And then the women we like to read about, Amy Carmichael, Gladys Aylward, or Adoniram Judson's wife, Nancy. They took great risks to save the lives of children, to save the life, the Word of God. I even think of people like my grandma, not so far removed from me. She stayed in a difficult marriage. Women of my generation, my peers, I look at them with great respect. I think you have so much courage and faith. Courage in action. So there's Bible verses that talk about, we can talk about it, now it's time to do something about it. Ezra 10:4, "Arise, for this matter belongeth unto thee. We also will be with thee. Be of good courage and do it." Galatians 4:18. I remember Nolan reading this in, maybe it was a teacher's meeting, I forget, but it was an encouragement to me ever since. "But it is good to be zealously affected always in a good thing." And he said, "Never lose sight of the vision God has given you for any part of his work." 1 Timothy 6:12 says, "Fight the good fight of faith. Lay hold on eternal life." What are some situations we need courage for? Here's some that I have. To stay in a difficult marriage and fight for the family. I think of my grandma again. To forgive again and again. Or to reach out over their own pain and turn it into something positive. To testify for Jesus when the opportunity is there. Not just like, I don't know what to say. Well, figure it out beforehand what you're going to say. And then say it. What about to tell your teenagers no? Or that came up already. To tell your teenagers no can be really, really hard. But it's necessary sometimes. Or to apologize to your children when you know you've been wrong. Or to go to bat for the underdog. What are people going to think of me if I stick up for these people or say something positive in this conversation? It takes courage to do that sometimes. Sometimes it takes courage to speak the truth in love, such as sharing difficult information. I'll read you a little story. It comes from a personal experience. "Esther, did you ask Susan if Kenny could stay at their place tomorrow afternoon?" asked Gary. "Yes, I did," said Esther. "Why?" "Well, Titus talked to me after church this morning. He said last spring, after their daughters were at our place, one of them told their mom that Kenny had touched her inappropriately while they were playing. It makes Susan very uncomfortable to have him there when Titus isn't around." "I don't blame her," said Esther. "But why didn't they tell us right away? Last spring? Why, that was almost a year ago. I wish we would have known." "I know," said Gary. Titus apologized for not telling us sooner." "Kenny should have been spanked," said Esther. "But now it's too late. He's only 5. He probably doesn't remember. I wonder if Susan was afraid I would get upset if she told me. Maybe I'll just ask her sometime if I have a good opportunity." "No," said Susan, when Esther opened the subject several weeks later. "No, that wasn't the reason. I know. I should have said something. I guess I just don't like talking about things like that." On the flip side of that, I will always be grateful to my friend who had the courage to call me one day and alert me to the possibility my son might be lying. We were able to confront him immediately, discipline promptly, and as I look back, it seems like that incident marked a turning point for the better in his later honesty with us. So, just sometimes there's a time to keep quiet, but if you would turn the tables and think, if it was my child and I would like to know, maybe that other mom would like to know too. You're not always just being a tattletale or a gossip. It takes courage sometimes to encourage husbands to accept counsel and discipline from other men. There was a good story in the Companions. I did not bring a copy with me, but it was called The Advice We Give. It was just an excellent story. Do you remember that, Violet? An older woman was encouraging the younger woman to encourage her husband to just accept the counsel of the committee, even if the committee wasn't being very fair or very nice, but just go ahead and take their advice. The story had just really a good outcome, and it was so well written, and I just thought that was, we don't read many stories like that, but it was so very good. Okay, the last point is wisdom. We talked about acceptance and letting go and courage and laying hold, and how do we know the difference? Well, the Bible says in James 1, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God. And prayer and fasting sometimes can help us arrive at wisdom when we just don't know for sure. I remember there was a time I felt very frustrated with someone we had to work with. I felt like this behavior could hardly be excused, and I really wanted to talk to some other people about it. Like, why is she behaving that way? It's just not okay. I spent some time in prayer and fasting, and I felt like the Lord was saying, just be still and pray about it. And over time, I learned this woman, she was younger than I was, and I learned she's not nearly as shallow as I had first imagined. And we became very good friends. And I've asked myself different times, would I have that relationship that I enjoy so much now if I had sabotaged it with criticism when it was still fairly new? So I believe the Lord can show us, but sometimes it's not going to be our first impulse that is the right thing. The wisdom from above, James 3, is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated. Do you have something to add about like finding wisdom in all this? I'm sure you do. Something else I have, be open to counsel and reproof. Even, you know, if you're criticized, you might think it's totally unjust and unfair. But often there's a kernel truth in it.
It does take a lot of courage to address something something that you have prayed about and bothers you, and it still bothers you, mm-hmm. and your husband is like, well, maybe you should go talk to that person. That takes a lot of courage, mm-hmm. especially if it's not well received. Say you go talk to your friend, mm-hmm. and then you're the bad guy. Mm-hmm. And this happened to us, mm-hmm. and my sister was really struggling with the same lady at church. Mm-hmm. And she'd call me sometimes, and I said, okay, I'm done listening to you. Have you talked to her about it? Mm-hmm. And she thought, well, then I'll be the bad guy, too. Well, I know, but I don't know where the balance is, because mm-hmm. I'm like,
you have something to add to that?
No, I
mean, yeah. I know, and I know other people that have experienced that too. So if I say something, I'm the bad guy. But if they, but
if you don't, and it's truly what you kind of wrong, what she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Are we following Matthew 18? I guess.
Mm-hmm. Do you have something to speak to that?
Well, maybe if you could flip it around and think about, if someone comes to me, how do I respond? Like, I just feel like when people come to me with something, and it is not the time for me to tell them their problem. There is something about really listening. Because like you said, there is often a grain of truth.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's the most bizarre thing, you think.
And it's easy to pick out the bizarre and ridiculous things
often,
they said.
Yeah, and you often will retaliate right there.
Yeah, but you do.
You know, and
yeah.
So I think, and if we can think about that, how we feel when people come to us, I think it makes us more compassionate than we do to somebody else. And even if they do respond rightly, you understand why they are.
That's a good point, Rose, and I'll add something to that. One time a friend wanted to share something with me, and she said, I have something to give you at school. She had written it in a note, and so I read this note that she had written to me, and I think it was something that her husband felt she should speak to me about, so she had that authority, but it was something kind of small. It was a particular dress that I had been wearing, and it was actually one that I kind of had some questions about too. And in the note she said, I do love you.
Aww.
And I know the kind of person she is. She meant that. She's not a critical kind of person. She's a very encouraging kind of person. It stung a little bit, like it always criticism does, but I couldn't not receive it. It was so sweet and gentle. And I told her, you know, I kind of had questions about that too. I'm just not going to wear that to church anymore. It was just a real simple thing, but I've thought about that, how, it was just...
You know, the other thing I do sometimes when I talk to someone like that, just ask questions. That helps a lot, because it gets them involved, and sometimes you can hear their heart in a way that kind of clears it up right there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's maybe not as it was.
And I have learned that... if you spend time with somebody one-on-one, not at church, it gives you a heart for them that you don't get. And I can always feel when I haven't done that recently enough, because then I start getting, you know, oh, I need to go spend the day with her.
And then you feel much more compassionate again.
Well, yeah, and you realize, I do love her. I do, and we all want to get to heaven. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, and 3 hours,
an hour.
Just drop by.
A current question I have, I'm not going anywhere with this, is a lady that I admire the way she's trying to rise above difficulties, health problems, and things. But I question if there isn't emotional things that have been repressed.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that's part of it. But how do you go to someone and say, I wish you would go for counseling?
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel loving? What's a positive way to lean toward that? And anybody got
ideas? It's a very good question. And a very real situation.
Because a lot of people who have the courage to rise above, right? Okay, whatever, we're not thinking about that, we're just going to do the right thing. Get patterns and habits of. And then eventually it builds up to where they have very little left of emotional.
Maybe if she was so alone, in fact, that you would say that all the people, someone needed different ways. and she feels like, you know, she's not the only one. That might be cleaner.
Our bishop one time said that we are ashamed to go for help or to ask for help. We should not be ashamed. We should be more ashamed to not ask when we need it.
I'm going to just read something here and then turn off the mic, and we should continue this conversation. One more thing. In finding wisdom, I have asked your authorities. You might be spared some regrets by maybe even just asking your husband or just getting some input as to what I should do. And I know it's a journey that we're all on. This serenity prayer, in its original, I guess it's closer to the original form. God, give me the grace to accept with serenity the things that cannot be changed, courage to change the things which should be changed, and the wisdom to distinguish the one from the other. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardship as a pathway to peace, taking as Jesus did the sinful world as it is, not as I would have it, trusting that you will make all things right if I surrender to your will, so that I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with you forever in the next. Amen.